No part of the following program may be used for training artificial intelligence technology. From KDNK Community Access Radio, in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States, this is program number 73 of The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience things like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us or our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people not only to go literally around the world, but around the block, to new adventures in their lives. Line ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer help them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind. Two-sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, how to choose a therapist. When the call 988, going blind from being shot, a frequent cause of blindness. And don't grab a blind person. Sometimes, during life's challenges, it would be nice to make them a little less challenging. A good way to do that is by talking to a therapist. Here, we hope to make helping choose the best counselor for you a little easier. Our guide is a blind retired child psychologist, Jim Stokes, PhD.
A psychiatrist is a medical doctor, goes to medical school, and then does a residency after medical school in psychiatry, where the focus tends to be on medication as a primary form of treatment. A lot of psychiatrists do therapy as well, but typically psychiatrists are more for medication.
There may be some situations where you need the specialized testing skills of a psychologist.
Psychologists, the difference with them is that they can do psychological testing. If you need a psychological report for some court thing or something like that, then you go to a psychologist. As well as therapy, you know, they have more school than the master's level therapists, social workers and all that, but that doesn't mean they're better therapists. I find that you have to have at least a minimum of a master's degree to practice in most states. And that's sort of some additional training, which is very helpful, and licensing is really important. But I don't know that it matters that much between a psychologist and an MSW, social worker, who's licensed and has a lot of experience. It depends a lot on individual therapist, whether they're a psychologist or social worker or mass level therapist.
Therapy requires a comfortable relationship.
That it might take a little work to find the right therapist and to be patient with that, because there's a lot of really good therapists out there. You want to find somebody that you're comfortable with. And if you find that you're holding back with a therapist or you feel like they really don't understand you, it's time to move on and find somebody else. I think you should address it with the therapist. And I feel like this may not be the best match for me, wanting to search out for other therapists. And that's totally fine. Therapists should be very comfortable or used to that, especially if they have quite a bit of experience. Because sometimes you don't click with people, no matter how good a therapist you are. It's just people are different. The things that I look for are, how long has the person been practicing? takes a little while for people to sort of get their skills honed as a therapist. You want somebody that's been practicing for, I personally would say, 10 or 15 years, so maybe I'm more picky. Again, looking at what areas of specialization they may have. Typically, when therapists are listed, they'll say, this is the type of issues that I tend to deal with.
Dr. Stokes suggests you check out a potential therapist's website to see if they list their philosophy of therapy.
You want to find somebody that what your concerns are high on their list of what they focus on in their practice. And then also sometimes I'll have a philosophical statement about the type of approach that they take or how they see their role as a therapist and how they see your role as a client. And I would look to see if that appeals to you or not. And then once you've kind of got a short list of people you're thinking about, call them and see if you have a short free consultation just to talk to them for 10 minutes or something, just to hear what they sound like, how they deal with you, you know, how they respond to anything you have to say. Are you comfortable with them? Because that's really the end goal, is to find somebody that you're very comfortable with, as well as somebody that has tools to help you work on the concerns that you do have. But it's really important that you trust that person and feel comfortable with them. So I would definitely talk to these people first before making an appointment. And then if say yes, and then make an appointment and meet with them, and the first time you're not really comfortable with them or it just doesn't feel right, then you could say, you know, you're shopping around. It's totally appropriate to do that. A good therapist wants you to have a good fit as well.
If you are gay or lesbian or are discriminated against or having problems because of your race, religion, or former religion or ethnic group, you may want to look for a therapist from your subgroup who already understands your circumstances. There are therapists with specialties like relationships, rehabilitation, addiction, older folks, children like Dr. Stokes, and blindness. These therapists may save you time and money because they're already familiar with possible problems affecting your life. But most importantly, they have to be good therapists. Dr. Stokes says therapy can be a good idea for people who are going blind or have lost their sight.
Anybody can benefit from therapy, but I'm biased because I've been a psychologist for 40 years. But I really think that, especially with dramatic changes like that, I mean, it's so huge. You know, I lost my vision over a period of time between age 25 and 45, but there is a significant amount of loss there. Whether it's over time or you know it's coming, is like RP, for example. It's once they're diagnosed, there's nothing they can really do about it. And over time, you're going to lose your vision. So that's a lot to deal with. You lose your vision, you lose your independence in so many ways. And of course, you can work hard at that and gain a lot of independence back. It's a dramatic life event and very, very traumatic to most people. But I tell you, you know, I have a therapist, and my therapist is not blind, but has worked with blind and low vision people through much of her career. So I feel very comfortable with her in that case. But certainly, you're never going to find somebody who has the same exact experiences that you do. And so you could spend a lot of time trying to find just the right blind therapist, or you could find somebody that has a lot of experience that you like just as well or better.
One of the biggest problems facing blind people is what other people, and even us, think we can't do. So including your family, or if you have no family, or your support group, and some of your sessions might be helpful.
I think having other important people in your life who can help explain and show understanding for what's on, I think that can absolutely be helpful, and so that everybody understands. Sometimes people are surrounded, you know, blind people can be surrounded by people who are overprotective and to always be safe, and so they don't let them do things, or they just don't realize that they can do things, and that of course is not helpful at all. And then there's people who treat blind people like they should be able to do everything like everybody else. And sometimes that can cause problems too. So having other people participate can be definitely helpful.
The most important thing to remember is that therapy works.
It does. Last statistics I looked, this was a long time ago, it was something like a third of the time it really helps. And then a third of the time it maybe helps a little bit, and another third it's not really helpful at all. What really matters is not only having a good therapist, but the client, the individual has to really work at it too. If you just go and you're like, okay, fix me up, make me better, but you're not willing to put any effort into it or examine your feelings or your thoughts or what went on for you, then you're not going to have success.
The first thing to do when feeling that therapy might help you is check your insurance for covered therapists, and then apply Dr. Stokes' suggestions. If you're in immediate need of help or just don't know where to start, you can call 988. That's 988. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Each state has its own program, but they're all similar. So I'll use Colorado, where I live, as a guide. Anyone can call or text 988 or use the live chat function. Services are free and available in English and Spanish and over 240 other languages. A trained counselor will understand your needs, from when you might just need to talk to someone to help with things like sexual orientation or addiction counseling. Unlike well-meaning family and friends, they will not be judgmental, and they'll know what kinds of questions to ask you and know when to listen. And they'll know where you can get follow-up help. That number again is 988. And don't worry about calling them for something that might seem minor to other people. You can also call them when someone important to you may need help and you don't know how to help them. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. The following story first aired on The Tactile Traveler, program number 56. Bill Johnson is 74 and retired now, but 34 years ago, he was involved in designing accounting information systems.
I was 41 years old. I was walking in downtown Atlanta, Georgia, with my boss and a client headed towards a subway to go to the airport to come home for the 4th of July weekend. And fellow came up behind us for no reason, middle of the afternoon, and started shooting from left to right. Shot my client, shot my boss, and I heard pop, 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 kind of over my left shoulder, thinking it was fireworks. I turned my head, thinking, who's doing that? And as I turned my head, I was shot right through the temple and instantly blinded. They were both killed.
He would have killed more people if a transit security officer hadn't been nearby.
He did get caught. He was caught on the scene. In fact, he, after shooting me, had more bullets in his gun, and he had his gun in his hand, and a security officer, policeman, I'm not quite sure who it was able to disarm him and arrest him, and he ended up in prison.
Bill said the shooter tried to plead not guilty by reason of insanity, but was ultimately found guilty and is serving 2 life consecutive sentences for murder. When Bill went to a blind training center in Arkansas, he met another guy there who was blind as a result of being shot, and started becoming aware that frequently being shot is a cause of blindness. When I was a student at the Colorado Center for the Blind, I was in the residential training program, which had 15 men and 15 women. 3 of the guys, 20%, were blind as a result of being shot. One said They say it was self-inflicted. I don't believe it. The second was sitting on a couch at a party. He stuck his hands between the cushions and felt a gun. So he stuck it next to his head and pulled the trigger. And the third guy, from New Jersey, had graduated from Princeton University that day. He was standing with his brother in his front yard when someone pulled up and started yelling at his brother and shot both of them. Luann Ryman, now 70, pulled off at a rest stop in 1991 to take a nap during a long drive when someone drove by shooting out car windows with a shotgun.
As a result, a drive-by shooting at a rest area west of Denver, Colorado. I was in my car sleeping around midnight, and somebody drove by and shot out my windshield and my passenger side window, and the pellets came through that, and I ended up with about 32 lead pellets lodged in my face, and I lost my left eye that night, and I have damage to my remaining eye as a result of that. I have lead pellets on my retina in that eye and visual damage there too. It was before cell phones. It was very dark on I-70, and I walked over to the eastbound lane and started trying to flag traffic down, and nobody would stop. I was actually in the middle of the highway, and they were swerving around me, and I'd see a light way off in the distance, and I just started walking up this road. I was sort of stumbling, falling, because at that point I had very little vision. My scalp and head were bleeding very badly. My left eye was literally hanging on my cheek, and I just kept walking and talking and repeating family names and birthdays. My head was fractured in two places. I was concerned that I might have brain damage, so I kept walking and got to a building with big glass windows, and I could see one of those push button phones that had about 16 buttons on it. So, and then by then I could see the reflection of my face in the glass and saw how badly damaged I was. And I picked up a big rock and threw it at that window, and it didn't break it. And I actually went and found a bigger rock and hit the window. It broke. Phone did not work. And about that time, a sheriff's deputy pulled up, and he actually had a gun drawn on me for breaking into the building.
Luann had to have one eye removed and still has pellets in a remaining eye, gums, and skull. The shooters were never caught.
I would love to talk to one of those kids that were in that car that night. And again, it would be no anger. I just want to know how this affected their life.
Gunpowder guns are not the only kind that are dangerous. According to the Center for Disease Control, 30 to 33,000 people are treated for eye injuries in emergency rooms per year in the United States from BB guns and air rifles. Kids have even gone blind from Nerf gun injuries, toys that aren't toys but are weapons. They can have the firepower and devastation of many traditional pistols, and they cause even more eye injuries than gunpowder guns. It's hard to reduce your chances of being shot when all you're doing is standing in your front yard in New Jersey, resting at a rest stop, or walking down a street in downtown Atlanta. But almost all BB gun and air rifle injuries can be prevented. They're almost always caused by and to unsupervised teenage boys, with the highest percentage 10 to 14-year-olds. Parents have to realize how dangerous air rifles and BB guns are. They should only allow kids to use them who are mature enough to understand their danger. And they should only let their kids use them under adult supervision with proper eye protection. Joanne Stamp, Lorraine Hutchinson, and Penn Street helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler. empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. On Tactile Traveler program number 4, we played the story, Don't Grab a Blind Person. Since then, people are still grabbing blind people. And now that we have listeners, we thought it would be a good idea to play it again. It's a rare day that I walk more than a block from my house when a well-meaning person doesn't grab me. It happens to all of us all the time. Sometimes it's even worse.
One day, and this was in my neighborhood, I stood at the intersection, busy intersection, to wait with my white cane and dark glasses to cross the street.
The Tactile Traveler's Lydia Eckert.
Out of nowhere, these two burly guys took me, one took me on my left, underneath my left arm, the other one underneath my right arm, lifted me and took me across the busy intersection, set me down before I had even a chance to scream that I'm being kidnapped. They disappeared.
They have no way of knowing how the people they grabbed might react. Danielle Montour.
I've been raped and sexually assaulted, that I'd be pretty paralyzed with terror because I've had negative experiences traveling before, being assaulted by people while traveling alone, and especially with two people who are much bigger and probably a lot stronger than me. That would be pretty scary, especially because I wouldn't exactly know where they were going to take me. You know, like, they might not have just been across the street. It might have been somewhere else. And while people might say, oh, it's broad daylight, that thing won't happen, you never know.
A friend of mine said that her blind former husband was standing at an intersection in New Zealand when two big guys there did the exact same thing. He had no way of knowing if the men knew that he was in front of a prison where he worked as a parole officer. You can imagine how scary that was for him, too. Jim Stokes, PhD, is a blind psychologist, and he says he also gets grabbed.
Happens all the time, people, when you're crossing the street or waiting at a bus stop, people will grab you and try to assist you in an assertive, physical way.
He also says you're usually better off being diplomatic than aggressive.
Just try to disengage yourself from them physically and let them know that you're okay just by saying, no, please don't touch me. I'm okay. Let go of my arm. And just to be clear about that, without pushing back or trying to be fighting them, because they're just trying to be helpful. And most typically, they just don't know the best way to do that. So just to be clear with your voice, please stop. And let them know this is the best way to help me, or I don't need any help, but I appreciate your efforts to help me.
Jim says if you would like assistance, ask if you can hold their arm by the elbow and walk half a step behind them. I was standing at a bus stop in Denver when two drunks were fighting over which bus I should take. One of them even flagged down a bus and pushed me on it. So I asked Jim, what do you do if the person who tries to help you is drunk, high, or mentally ill?
Well, I've taken what's called a one-touch self-defense class through my Department of Voc Rehab training program, and they taught us to disengage from people, and it depends on where they grab you, of course, but if they grab your arm, to just flatten your hand out and jerk your hand away from them, and then ask them to stop and let you be, let them know you're fine.
Don't forget, if you're sighted, the person you would like to help could also be drunk, high, or mentally ill. So unless it's just a real emergency, ask before touching someone. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Why, it's my talking scale. reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please let us know by sending an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell Traveler the American way with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on Aftersight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and on audio information networks in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine and available wherever you get podcasts, and by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations who helped make today's program possible. Be My Eyes Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Megan Passmore, Kaylee Romero, Evan Starnes, and Wally Burley. This has been The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This is a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.